So the last will be first, and the first will be last. Amen. Amen. Like many in my early 20s, I struggled with my faith. My faith, not in Jesus, but in institution, in church, in humanity. I struggled with how to live my faith on earth. And I struggled as a young person with the maturity of a young person. I still struggle with how to live my faith. But then, as a young person, my struggle often led me to journey out in the world. As an older person, my faith struggles now tend to lead me to journey within. Richard Rohr, as many of you have read, refers to this as the first half and second half of life journeys. During my first half of life, when I was struggling with something, my faith, my relationships, my vocation, I would often save up enough money and jump on a plane and journey. Literally anywhere I could go with a passport, a backpack, and some cash. During one particularly difficult period in my life, following the death of a dear friend and the end of a long-term relationship, I bought a ticket to London. I had no plan and no reservations, literally or figuratively. I just got on a plane, landed in London, and took a bus to Glastonbury. I was maybe 23 and definitely feeling lost. Everything I thought about life was in question. My friend that had died was an amazing soul. He had given his entire life to community service and to God, and now he was gone. And his young family was left to figure out life without him. And after having cared for his children during his illness, after burying him and beginning to feel my own feelings of loss and grief, I bought that ticket to London and took a bus to Glastonbury. I had a backpack, a few bucks, and like I said, no plan except to walk and to pray. When I got off the bus in Glastonbury, I stepped out onto the wet streets of a city I had never been in before. Nothing was familiar, and I had nowhere to go. As I began to walk down the street, I looked up and I saw a large road sign, a literal road sign, but as it turned out, also a spiritual sign. The sign read, "Changed priorities ahead." That's the British equivalent for our road sign, "Lanes shift ahead." It's a warning sign. Changed priorities ahead. I read that sign about 3 times, and then I sat down in the dewy grass and I wept. I wept for my friend's wife. I wept for his young children. I wept for the loss of promise that he had brought into this world, for all of his friends, and I wept for myself. After some time of mourning and grieving on the side of the road, I picked up my backpack, I put one foot in front of the other, and I started on my journey, changed priorities ahead. At 23, nothing could have been more true. Not just because I was dealing with grief and big life questions, but because my priorities in my early 20s had been all about me. But now something was shifting. What was once important was becoming less so, and what was now crucial for my growth was all new. My values were needing to change. Everything I thought about what was fair and right in the world was shifting, changed priorities ahead. This was the beginning of my season of the great reversal. And Jesus said, so the last will be first, and the first will be last. In Matthew, there are at least 8 parables or stories meant for our learning that begin with, the kingdom of heaven is like. I imagine Jesus teaching the disciples. He has told them a story. The kingdom of heaven is like. And they all just stare at him blankly. And so he tries another. Still nothing, just blank stares. And then another, and yet another. And by the 8th time, he begins, okay. So the kingdom of heaven is like. And then in an attempt to simplify, he just says, okay, so what I'm trying to say is the first will be last and the last will be first. That's it. The deep meaning of all of these parables is really that simple. Changed priorities ahead. Parables are meant to confuse us, to complicate things for us, to make us need to journey outward and inward to discover new understandings of ourself and the world around us. Jesus gives his students and us many opportunities to listen and understand what the kingdom of heaven is like. He wants us to understand this because for the students to understand the kingdom of heaven is for them to understand what it is they are to be building here on earth. This is not just an eschatological venture. This isn't simply Jesus trying to help the students understand what happens after death. This is about their present work before them right here on earth. Jesus taught them to pray, "Your will be done on earth as it is in heaven." The disciples are being taught what heaven is like so that they will know how to do God's will here on earth. The first will be last, and the last will be first. For the disciples, this parable, they are journeys into this great reversal. Everything they assume about the world as it is on earth is being turned upside down. The great reversal, changed priorities ahead. The Beatitudes, blessed are the poor, Lazarus and the rich man, the parable of the lost sheep, the prodigal son, the mustard seed, and our parable today, the story of the laborers in the field. All of these parables have a simple and surprising end. All of these teachings of Jesus are counterintuitive if our minds are set on earthly things. But all of these teachings are meant to help us practice just the opposite, and to rather set our minds on divine things, on how we build the kingdom of heaven here and now. Leave the 99 sheep to look for the one. Okay, not that smart. When your mind is set on earthly things, give everything you have to the son that abandoned you and then came home for a party. The largest things grow from the smallest seeds. Lazarus, a poor and dirty homeless man, sits beside Abraham. Blessed are the poor. All of these theological statements turn the students' earthly understanding upside down and call on them to set new values and form new ethics. All of these teachings call the student to set their minds on the divine, on what the kingdom of heaven is like. The first will be last, and the last will be first. This parable today isn't about economics, at least not in a market demand and supply kind of way. This parable today is a great reversal of just that. All of the workers are paid the same, No matter how long they have labored, if they wished to labor at all, they all got paid the usual daily wage. In our capitalist, market-driven culture, this parable is indeed a great reversal. This story isn't about production or consumption, supply or demand. This isn't a story of limited resources and how to deal them out. This is a story of abundance and grace, God's grace, and how we, the students of Jesus, can build the kingdom of heaven by receiving that abundant grace and loving our neighbor from that place of abundance. A supply and demand market economy is about controlling supply. In our economy, we have a narrative of limited supply of food, of housing, of medical care, so that we can charge the consumer a certain amount in order to make money. In our parable, Jesus offers us a great reversal, not of our economic system, although it may impact our systems, but of our values and ethics, a great reversal of our narrative of scarcity. Instead, Jesus offers us a narrative of abundance. The values and ethics of a narrative of abundance are radically different than the narrative of scarcity. And the response to a narrative of abundance is generosity. When the landowner pays everyone the same wage, regardless of the time they have worked, the laborers who have worked the most hours respond with anger. They respond by arguing with the landowner. And he says, "Are you envious because I am generous?" Changed priorities ahead. The values and ethics and the priorities of the laborers are so different from the landowner that they cannot imagine why he is so generous. But he says, "Is it not my choice what I do with what is mine? The first will be last, and the last will be first." The landowner is offering the laborers an opportunity to change their priorities from self to common good. In the first half of life, Richard Rohr says that our focus is on self, our development of ego, and our earthly success. This is crucial, says Rohr, because without ego, we lack the basis of resiliency needed to handle life's many challenges. Ego and self-focus isn't the problem. The problem is when we get stuck there, when we cease to grow and develop our ethics and values from self to other, from an economy of supply and demand and scarcity to an economy of grace and abundance. In the second half of life, if we grow in maturity and spirit, we become free to serve. We are liberated to offer all we have for the common good. Church, liturgy, belonging to community is meant to assist us in this great reversal. We are, as the disciples were, gathered together to receive and then sent out into the world to offer, to live out of this narrative of abundance. And our prayers and our practices together are for us an invitation to this great reversal, to change our priorities so that we too can serve from a place of abundance. The kingdom of heaven is like a king who knows how to feel, a landowner who is generous. The kingdom of heaven is like this, and we, all of us here, are called to build the kingdom of heaven here and now. We are called to a great reversal of a narrative of scarcity to a narrative of abundance. The kingdom of heaven is like that. In the kingdom of heaven, there is plenty. There is an abundance. And our faith calls us to this practice of believing and living out of that place of abundance. changed priorities ahead and on earth as it is in heaven. Amen.